This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are, and live with all your faults. I wanna wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all, so why don't you smile?
It is 8 o'clock here on a Wednesday morning, and I was talking with Mike Regner. He was telling me lies about going to the gym this morning early and kicking everybody's ass. So you know you're going to have a good interview when it starts like that, when we just start lying right out of the chute. So, Mike, first of all, good morning. Welcome back to All Marine Radio.
Good morning, Mac, and thanks. And thanks to all the folks that are out there listening to this motivation and pure true gouge.
First of all, and welcome to the West Coast. Welcome to the good side of the country. And so you were just telling me about shoulder surgery. So this is how you're getting, this is how you know you're getting old, right? When you meet your friends, right? I see the commandant last week in Quantico at the General Officer Symposium, and he starts telling me about his hip replacement. I said, you know what, we've officially become old, and I don't know why you're dragging me into it, because I'm not. But we talk about our surgeries. And so you had what kind of surgery? Rotator cuff?
We had rotator cuff surgery on my shoulder because, you know, it's like I joke with my friends that I said I'm a member of AARP, Aging Athlete Repositioning Program. Yeah, it has nothing to do with the age. I'm just saying that, you know, in fact, I was joking with the commandant when I found out he had hip surgery. And, you know, and I had back surgery not too long ago, and I said, good luck getting through the airports with all that titanium. He says, oh, I got the latest and greatest. They got ceramics out now. You don't have to have all that titanium. So you're right. As you get older and you want to throw your grandkids around, and, you know, you still want to water ski or rock climb or haul a dead deer out of the woods helping a wounded warrior on a wounded warrior hunt, you better be on game. And so, you know, to stay in some level of physical conditioning just keeps you in the game, keeps you in what the Marine Corps instilled in all of us, some level of discipline.
Well, you know, Mike, that's hard. I had a doctor tell me when I came back in the Marine Corps in 2003, I went to get my physical, and he said, hey, can I tell you something? I said, what? He said, how old are you? I said, 45. He said, you're a Marine, aren't you? I said, yeah. And I said, how'd you know? He said, we can smell them here. He said, you're in better physical shape than the rest of those guys in there. And they range from age like 27 to about age 40. But let me give you some advice. You can only get so much out of your body until your body begins to reclaim itself. And so let me guess, you've been athletic all your life. You're a Marine and you just fight through pain, right? I said, well, yeah, that's what you do. And he said, just pay attention to your body, because when you damage it and we can't fix it, that's forever. So I know you've ignored pain in the past, but you need, as you get older, to start listening to pain and adjust accordingly. And you know, and I thought that was pretty good advice. Not all of us get it in time, because if you're, for instance, if you're an infantryman in your life, you know, and if you do that for years, whether you care to believe it or not, it takes a toll on your body. And you can only give so much of that before it begins to reclaim itself. So, and it's not a very, I don't know, positive outlook when they, you know, you can't go haul a deer out of the woods. You can't, you know, your body's, you know, broken. So, I mean, that's not a small issue as veterans age, especially guys that have been to combat arms doing heavy lifting stuff.
Yeah, you're so right. And I guess it comes to you when you stretch a nerve or you stretch a shoulder or you're throwing a friend around in the pool and it takes a month to recuperate. One of the things that I've learned from all my friends out at the Wounded Warrior Regiment or Wounded Warrior Battalions East and West, as well as the Walter Reed Bethesda Medical Center, is as you do get older, very few guys and gals can continue to run those 10Ks. Maybe they can walk the 10Ks, Marine Corps Marathon, maybe you can walk it, but most of my docs after I had back surgery and shoulder surgery said you really got to go to the low impact, and you've really got to stretch a lot longer than you used to. So, you know, whether you're biking or you're swimming or you're walking at a high speed, that's the low impact. So that would be my advice to some of my buddies as they're getting older, is that, yeah, we all love to run every day at lunchtime. In the morning in the Marine Corps, we'd get out and we'd run and we'd throw on a 90-pound rucksack and we'd wonder why we had lower back pains when we were 30s and 40s. Well, the days of carrying those heavy rucks, you know, you can substitute it for a grandchild in my case, but just got to do exactly that. Got to stay in shape. You got to have some type of load bearing, some type of aerobic, and it's got to be low impact. So you're spot on for this kind of advice.
But that's so, Mike, that's not that. When we hear that, we're like, oh, so I'm going to go out and power walk? What's next, the velour sweatsuit and me holding hands with my wife while I'm doing that? Come on, that's not me. I swore that I would never, ever be caught dead doing it. Or the only way I would be caught dead is if she put me on a set of rollers when I was dead, put a velour sweatsuit on me, and then drug me around the block. I will not do that because, I mean, we recoil at that. But you know what? I will tell you, I think, you know, you have to decide what you're going to be in your life. And you can, if you do that, those things, I mean, let me tell you, swimming's a ball buster.
Oh, yeah.
Go swim.
You know, I tell guys all the time, if you can swim 1,000 yards down 1,000 meters in some of these 25 or 50 meter pool, that's really a good start. And you ought to be able to do it somewhere between 20 and 30 minutes. And that is shoulders, that is aerobic, that is hips. They're all going, okay, I'll try it. They go for about 200 yards. And this sucks. I'm out of breath. I can't breathe. My heart rate's 200. I'm going to stay after it. 2 or 3 months later, in the winter, you could do it all year round. So you just got to find that sweet spot that will give you the discipline to keep going back, get it with a bunch of your buddies. I got to tell you, I was at Henderson Hall Gym up in 2 days ago working out. And, you know, when you do physical therapy for a rotator cuff surgery, you're supposed to use like a 1 or 2 pound dumbbell, a little pink thing, green thing.
Not the pink one. Really?
No, I couldn't believe it. 1 pound is pink. And so I grabbed the 1 pound, looked around the room, and somebody saw me and says, hey, General, what happened to you, man? I'm going, oh, shut up. Anyway, you just got to suck it up, get a routine, get buddies that give you crap, because you'll love them and they'll be there for you when you need them.
They never say anything to you when you're in the gym because you're a general and they want to talk to you. And then go near that pink dumbbell and all of a sudden everybody's lipping off from different corners of the gym. I'll tell you what I do swimming is go swim 1,000 meters, okay? Or go swim 500 meters and then go do 10 sprints the length of the pool. Right? With 60 seconds or 45 seconds in between. And watch what happens to your heart rate. So you get, you know, that long kind of, aerobic, or anaerobic exercise. And then when you blast it in the pool, a length, and again, as hard as you can to the point where people think something's wrong, like, what is wrong with that angry person? Right? That kind of swimming, right? Where you're just, you, like, your Olympic you know, 25-meter sprint. Go ahead and do that, and do that for start at 10 and then work your way up to 20. With this, and let me just tell you, you talk about a good workout, it's an awesome workout. And so you could still have the same kind of meat-eater mentality or knuckle-dragger mentality doing it, but you do have to find different ways that are low impact. Cause let me just tell you, your body just can't take it. Now, there might be a few people that say, I get up and still run. Butch Neal was like that, right?
Yeah.
He was like a monkey. He was made to run.
Right? Yeah.
And so, but most of us aren't like that.
I'm going to call you back in about 2 months, and I'm going to try your workout. Swim about 500 and then swim some laps, speed laps in between, and just see how that works out. I know that's just going to burn calories big time.
Oh, but it feels good because, you know, at the end of the sprint, you stop, you're like, and then you look around, and then you wait for about 30, 45 seconds, and then you go back the other way. What I liked about it is you can feel yourself getting stronger. Right,
yeah.
It's not. I mean, you can feel. So I enjoy that. Not kind of stupid. Look, we're Marines. We'll find stupid things to do in the pool. Okay, it's what we do.
Yeah, that's the funny thing about wrestling when you're dead. Man, oh man, is that true? But anyway.
All right, now you're out here for a reason, and you're on this program for a purpose. So first of all, tell everybody what you do in conjunction with the Marine Corps League.
Well, the Marine Corps League asked me a few years back to work closely with them on their military expo series. In particular, the largest one is the Modern Day Marine at Quantico, Virginia. But this week I'm out on the Expo West, and it's a military expo, and it's got upwards to 150 different vendors and or charitable organizations and or colleges, different types of industry that is really connected to a family member, to a service member, to enhancing the safety and the security of the young men and young women that enter into the armed forces. And then in many cases, when they elect to get out of the armed forces, there are those type of opportunities, which I'm pretty strong on, that because I have transitioned from the active ranks. There are many opportunities for young men and young women and older folks and or their family members. You go to these Expo West here at Camp Pendleton in the Combat Logistics Regiment Area 15 across from the air station. You go to these things, you go, okay, so what am I going to see? Am I going to see a new aircraft? Am I going to see a new knife? Am I going to see the latest in technology, robotics, some of the programs that you might see advertised or discussed in the Marine Corps Gazette or some of our professional journals? You will not only just see the products, you'll get a chance to meet with the engineers that design some of these products. And I got to tell you, if I was, you know, a younger Marine on active duty or even a senior Marine, I'd want to know who is developing this new, let's say, backpack. What are they taking into consideration? Do they know when I walk out of the FOB, I'm carrying an average, let's just say you're a combat arms individual, I'm averaging 80 pounds. I've got my basic equipment, my basic ammo, my basic water, 80 pounds. Are they making these packs right? So I love to see young Marines go in there, grab a pack, grab a pistol grip, take a look at the latest technology and go, sir, I got to tell you, ma'am, you're missing the beat on the grip. You're missing the weight that sits on my hips. I'm 5'2". I'm a young man or a young woman. I'm not that tall. I could not take this pack. What are you doing about people like me in combat arms? So, Mac, this is an opportunity for industry to get good gouge from our service members, but at the same time, our service members that go to this, and all branches go, but of course we're on a Marine Corps base, so it'll be 99% Marines and sailors, of course, that are on the base, and some other folks that come up from the region. What is really neat is when they come into these, they're going to see where are we with unmanned aerial systems in the technologies by Marine Corps Warfighting Lab, by Office of Naval Research, by Space and Naval Warfare Command, by DARPA, by these different organizations. So I really like to see the service members come in, learn about the latest technology, and the technology might be the latest in socks. It might be the latest in athletic gear that has been really transitioned into military gear, the latest in fabric technology. There are just so many different venues. And I honestly like the fact that there are normally within 10 to 15 to 20 different charitable organizations that are also at these expos that give our service members and their families, if they need a little help with maybe college education, maybe with getting an apartment, with getting a home, with finding employment after the armed forces. There are many, many opportunities at these expos, both at Camp Lejeune, this one, of course, at Camp Pendleton, in the larger one, which has about 450 to 500 different types of vendors set up there. That really gives them all a great opportunity. So I hope I've answered your initial question.
No, you have. So out here now, what are the things about this show? First of all, your whole board's out here. Is your board out here?
Yeah, well, it's two different boards. The Marine Corps League, right. Their senior leadership, of course, they have a commandant, assistant commandant, and a couple levels below that, and some other Marine Corps leaguers from all over the United States. They come out and they interact with these young Marines because they really sponsor this expo. And they've hired Emerald, a company that puts it all together and gets the different vendors. But the Marine Corps League is really the heartbeat of the organization, and they do have a preponderance of their board out here. And you'll see, and a lot of these guys and gals, they're, you know, some of them are in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, and some of them got out of the Marine Corps as a corporal or a colonel. Doesn't matter the rank. And they said, I love the Corps. I love the camaraderie. I love the fact that I can continue to serve my community as well as my nation as a Marine Corps leaguer. That's one board. Now, the Marine Corps Association and Foundation, that's another board that, you know, they put out the Gazette. They put out the Leatherneck, and they have a foundation, Marine Corps Association. And that, again, the Gazette's a great article, great magazine, and all that good stuff. But their board is out here, too, and they're meeting with the Commandant of the Marine Corps League, Wendell Webb, and they're discussing ways that we both can work closer together. So those two boards are out here. It's truly a Marine Corps League event, but we try to get closer and closer to the Marine Corps Association because they have very good business practices, and I think – you know, when you read their mission statement, they're all about educating Marines. And that's good. That was Lejeune's reason, right, when he established this program back in the 1917-1920 timeframe. The Marine Corps League, we're America's Marine Corps Alumni Association spread out across America in over 550 detachments all across America. Some of them might have four in a detachment. Some of them might have 200. But it's a reason for Marines to stay connected. And as we get older, and as you first get out, I mean, the strength of the Corps, you know, when they say the strength of the Corps is the pack, and the pack is the fire team. Well, when you get out of the Corps, you're looking, you're searching. And the Marine Corps League is that organization, one of many, that can keep you in the pack as you make that transition.
Well, let me just tell you something there, Regner. You and I have business to do, because one of the things when I go around, I did my post-traumatic winning thing at Camp Lejeune for the 2nd Marine Division. I did it again last week at the General Officer Symposium because of the reaction that happened out of the 2nd Marine Division. One of the things that I say is, look, this tribe that you belong to, okay, is the most incredible culture you'll ever be touched by in your life. There is not another like it. Okay? You need to stay connected to your tribe. Okay? You need to stay, like, when we're in a room and somebody farts and we don't have to ask because that's how well we know each other, who it belongs to, those Marines, you can't let them out of your life. And there's a mental health component to that. Right? Because they will call bullshit on you when you're getting sideways. Okay? They will be there for you no matter what. Because if you call them in the middle of the night and say, I need you, they will get in their trucks, they'll get on airplanes, and they will come. Because that's the way this culture is. You need that when you struggle. You need that. And the Marine Corps League is that connecting file. Okay? Marine for Life is another component of that connecting file. It is the infrastructure that we stay connected by. Okay, and we need as Marines, right, we need to make sure we communicate that, okay? Come down, we'll tell you who the assholes are at the VA. We can maybe help you find a job or your wife find a job. Come meet us, we're Marines. At the minimum, you're going to have a good time because you know we're going to talk a little shit, okay, about how soft you are as opposed to how hard we were. So that's us. That's our culture. So we need to sit down and do business. Because I'm about to change the planet here. So it's been an incredible month for me and for this thing called post-traumatic winning, which says that, look, we can do this, right? It's in our heritage. It's in our culture, right? Let me show you a path and then let me challenge you. It ain't good enough just to do it for you. My challenge to you is that we're Marines. We are in it too. Win it. So that means you got to give to other people. And when you give to other people, guess what happens to you? Your heart gets bigger, your shoulders get stronger, and that pack you're carrying, it doesn't feel like anything anymore. And our job is to make each other better, to make ourselves better, to make our communities better, which makes the nation better. That's us. That's our culture. We can do this. So you and I have business to do, my friend.
Yeah, we do. I that's a brilliant discussion that you just shared with, I hope, hundreds of thousands of people that are a little concerned about the next step in their life. You know, when you get into the Marine Corps, that's mother or father takes care of you, and that mother or father is called the Marine Corps. And then you get ready to get out. Whoa, wait a minute. Right. Huge. This is huge. Where am I going for this? I want to do two more. I want to give a couple plugs, Mike. And sure. One plug is, as you already stated, that's the Marine for Life program. I really love that program because my wife Mary and I frequently go to that, and we encourage Marines that are getting out to give their 20 to 30 second speed networking pitch on why industry, whoever comes to the networking organization, the Marine for Life program, it may be 10 or 20 different members of industry. But that individual's got to give, the individual Marine's got to give his 20-second pitch on why you're so valuable to you, name the company. So Marine for Life is just really, really getting back together. And I actually talked to General Jim Jones about a week ago about coming to another event. He said he's just trying to do that because General Jim Jones established the Marine for Life program. It kind of got back burner for a while, but I love the way you're bringing that up. That's plug number one, Marine for Life. We're going to do it this week with the Sugar Bear Foundation, and Marine Corps Association is going to help that as well as the Marine Corps League. The second item back is the Naval Institute, U.S. Naval Institute, that produces the Prestige magazine. You're going to have to ask Mary Regner to produce a book called The Parent's Guide to the Marine Corps. And Mary's in her last, I don't know, month or so of producing that. And she talks about, in the last few chapters.
Wait a minute. Who's Mary Regner?
I have no idea, but she's a good-looking lady.
Is that your wife?
Yes. Can't believe it. You know, she says, they didn't ask you to write it, Michael.
Exactly.
You're my technical advisor, so just sit over there and tell me what a fire team is if I need to know. Or what's this MOS? So it's really neat, Mac, that in about the next 2 months it goes to the editor, but she has the last few chapters talk a little bit about how to transition and the value of transitioning and the value of the Marine Corps Life Program and the Marine Corps League and the different service organizations that allow you to stay connected.
Right.
So, Mac, I got to tell you, what you're bringing up is golden, and I hope a lot of people take it on board.
Well, again, I come at it from the angle of mental health. Right, and learning to live with trauma because it's not going away. The things that affect us, the things that we encounter in life in the Marine Corps will stay with you forever. So how do you coexist with it? And you're staying connected. And here's the other piece that I'll share. The secret of the Hanoi Hilton. Of why so few of those guys came out with PTSD is they did one thing that we don't like to do. They talked about it. They were tortured, and many of them felt they betrayed each other, they betrayed their country, and that you don't want to talk to me anymore. They talked about it. They forgave each other. Okay? And as a result, they have come back as a group, And their success as a group, I think, is at the very, very top of groups that are studied in this country. Their performance in life, their satisfaction with life, their health, all. Well, what happened there? And there wasn't a mental health professional in there. What happened? They had each other. And they talked about it. They were not afraid to talk about it. And so the connecting files are huge because it promotes, you know, our intertribal communication. That which we won't tell a stranger, we will tell another Marine because they're part of our tribe. And so I think that's huge. And so these organizations, Mike, that we're talking about, the Marine Corps League and, you know, Marine for Life, they are the connecting files. They are the people that you can cover down behind and on when your life gets difficult. And we tell somebody to cover down, what does it mean? Hey, follow me. I'll get you where you need to go. And it starts when you're lost at the basic school as a lieutenant, right? And your patrol gets picked up by somebody and they say, hey, cover down. We're going that way. And you do, and it turns out better. And so that's what those organizations do. And we got to do a better job selling it because we need them. We need them in our lives. And so well done to you guys. And so that's exciting stuff. Talk to me about this expo. What are you excited? I'm excited to see the ACV. I've never seen it, obviously, in person, and it's going to be there. I'm excited to see that. What are you excited to see, starting tomorrow?
Okay. All right, at the equipment side, I got to tell you what I'm most excited about is the battle skills testing. I want to take the personal side of the show, of the exhibit, because years ago, Mac, when you were in, we used to really do the Marine Corps Combat Readiness Evaluation System, the MCRES, and part of that was really the basic skills testing that everybody had to go through, whether you're a captain or a corporal, didn't matter, every year you had to go through some level of battle skills testing. Well, that too, because of combat, we just didn't stay up with it. Well, now the Marine Corps, over at the Marine Corps Combat Development Center, said we got to get back on holding ourselves accountable to certain basic skills. So these basic skills are going to be retaught. This whole program is going to get revamped, and it's going to get introduced out at this expo. So I'm excited to see the basic battle skills testing program get explained, show us where it's going in the future, so that regardless of our rank or our age in Marine Corps, we're going to have some level of knowledge on that. So that's one part. The second part I'm also excited about is you've got Sergeant Major Overstreet, and you've got a couple other Sergeant Majors that are going to be here, Mike Barrett, and they are actually going to be involved in a part of a physical fitness program that the Marine Corps has a colonel that's coming out from Quantico that talks about mind, body, and health. And so they're going on a moto run, and they've got four other elements of this physical endurance program and or testing program. And so part of the program that I'm excited about is, of course, the modern equipment. Like you said, the ACV. I'm huge on that because, unfortunately, the amphibious tractor, the AAV, that's just, you know, that's 50 years old. That really needs to get replaced. And again, 98% of the AAV is used feet dry, in the sand, in the hills, in the desert. Only 2 to 3%, maybe 4% max, is shipped to shore, which is why the ACV is just so much more, in my estimation, so much more mechanically sound, safe, and has greater speeds and very, very good survivability once it goes feet dry. It swims at about 7 knots in the water, but again, we're talking about a system that needs to transport troops at high rates of speed in a safe manner with good modern technology.
So okay, let me ask you a question. The Amtrak traveled, you said the ACV at 7 knots. What did the Amtrak do?
Well, on a good day, somewhere around 9 knots in the water. So 9 knots, maybe with current, you could get up to 10. So we're looking at 3-knot difference, 3-mile-an-hour difference in the water between the amphibious tractor and the ACV. So I don't really see a huge value because in modern warfare, you're going to go with, if you're going to go and launch from an underway platform at night, you're probably going to do it on an uncontested area. or you're going to establish a beachhead somewhere or a port facility, you're not going to go. The days of people saying, well, you're going to Saipan, you're going to Guadalcanal. No, I think we've moved past that in our technology and in our survivability reasoning.
Well, truth be told, the last time we did that was World War II, because even the most recent event, which would be the landing at Incheon, I mean, that was an unopposed landing. So you had what you're describing of as you know, look, we're going to find someplace unopposed, and that's where we're going to go ashore. So that speed factor doesn't need to be a component of survivability as it had to be during World War II.
Yeah, that absolutely, Mike. Another thing I'm excited about is I always like to see, because I was an infantryman, my son's an infantryman. In fact, he's getting ready to come out here to California before too long, and I have the opportunity to take command of an infantry battalion. I'm always looking for ways to see what has industry done to lighten the load on the individual combat rifleman. So I want to see the newer rounds, whether it's the 6.5 Creedmoor. I want to see the lethality of these new smaller rounds. Maybe it's a larger round, but it has a different level of impact.
Right.
And I want to see what type of equipment these young Marines are going to be wearing when they go outside the FOB. And now, in regards to robotics and unmanned aerial systems, that and artificial intelligence, that changes quarterly, if not monthly. And I want to see the latest in unmanned aerial systems. So a squad leader, maybe the 13th man in a squad, or maybe a squad person number, if you're going to a 13-person squad or a 15-person, who's going to be the unmanned aerial system operator? What else will they have the responsibility for as far as mechanical learning, artificial intelligence, or 3D printing? That type of technology will also be available to be either seen or discussed at this expo.
You know, those are really interesting because my youngest son, Patrick, was a part of 3-5 when they did the Sea Dragon stuff. And, you know, and he and I were having a conversation. I said, so what are your guys' thoughts relative to the best configuration for a squad? And he looked at me and he said, well, it depends. And I thought, whoa, that's not a lieutenant type answer. That's actually a grown up answer. He says, you know, all of them have, you know, utility. For instance, even if you have the larger squads, you know, there are situations in close terrain where you might want to make a fourth fire team inside of a squad and have your teams be three person teams. I said, whoa, you heard somebody say that, because I know you didn't think of that. It was very interesting. And so, you know, but the robotic, first of all, the robotic mule, I said, what have you guys liked the most? He said, the thing they don't want to give us yet. I said, what? He said, there's this mule, right? He said, and then he looks at me and goes, do you know what those are? I said, shut up, you boot. And I said, they used to be in the 81-millimeter mortar section of the battalion, but, you know, they had mules, and they're just a flatbed go-kart, essentially. He said, yeah, that's what it is. But this thing's a robot, Dad, and it will follow you, and it's kind of like an all-terrain vehicle. It was the best. You throw your packs on it, you throw water, ammunition, and, you know, you can set it at some point and then call it to you. He said, it's awesome. And he said, but they're not buying that yet. So all those things then, coupled with the technology thing, collide at the squad level and the platoon level. And here's the other questions then are, well, who controls all this? And is a squad leader with only SOI training as he's come through, is that guy going to be able to control this? Or does this now create a mandate that our corporals that are going to be squad leaders, they've got to go to a school, and I don't mean a four-week school, which is about 2.5 weeks in length when you take out the joining time and getting ready for the graduation ceremony time. You know, I mean a legit school that might be 4 or 5 months akin to our basic school to make this guy professional. Are we prepared to do that? So there's all kinds of great institutional questions coming with, you know, the way we are equipping ourselves, and I think they're incredibly intellectually engaging. So anyway, just a thought.
I got to tell you, that's your son is, he is hitting that one out of the ballpark. Because if you take a look at what Warfighting Lab is putting out, and some of the issues and items that the Marine Special Operations Forces, MARSOC, are putting out, it talks exactly to that. If a squad, if a fire team is five, and the 11th person is the small unmanned aerial system operator, the technology NCO, if he's number 11, 12 is assistant squad leader, 13 is the squad leader, you're absolutely right. Your son was brilliant to say that, I think, Mike, because honestly, when you take a look at all the different things that you could be placed in at the smallest operating unit in the Marine Corps, which is, has never really truly been defeated in combat, is the squad. And they've got it. They're the ones that are alone and unafraid out there. They're the ones that are leaving the fob all the time. You know, fire teams, not so much. Squad, absolutely. They're the ones that are right out and about. And I think your son and my son, when they were young lieutenants, and whether it was Iraq or Afghanistan, they're the ones that are, that would be gone for 2 or 3 days, but at the same time, they did have the logistical means, the medical means, all the type of support they would ever need. But the days of going out as a company, going out as a large platoon, those days are not quite what they used to be. I see more and more operations in the future, as we did when we were really finishing up in Afghanistan, and that's going out as a squad because they have such lethality and connectivity.
And the other thing is, when you talk about fighting peers, when you mass, right, the lethality of modern weapons is such that you might be setting, when you do that, you might be setting the stopwatch on the end of your life and the lives of your Marines, because, right, if you can be seen, right, with the way modern munitions are, you know, they'll drop it on your head. Now, I mean, in Vietnam, I remember having Jarvis Lynch on, Major General type, and he talked about an article that he wrote called The Dead Went Last, and that is an article about an event that happened at an LZ by the name of Margo up in the northwest corner of I Corps. He was the OPSO, and they got told to head out to this area. They boom him into LZ Margo, and now they spread out, and they're looking for the NVA. Well, they know they're being watched, right, as up in, and that was the NVA, not the Viet Cong up there, right? So he then gets this message, hey, you need to get everybody back to the LZ. And he says, I can't. The LZ's not big enough, right, because of the terrain. If I bring them there, I'm going to consolidate too many people in one spot. They're watching us. They'll blast the shit out of us. And he gets the proverbial shut up and color. He pushes back again. Hey, we told you, get in that LZ. So, and what was going on was there was an arc light going in north and west of them along the Ho Chi Minh Trail. But instead of some ops person at the battalion or regimental level saying, hey, I set this, I shackle that, get southeast of this grid intersection, right, so that he could stay dispersed, some asshole tells him, get everybody in the LZ. And what do you think happens? He medevacs 150 Marines out of that LZ. Yeah. And the dead, in fact, went last. And lo, 50 years later, he's still scarred by that shut up and color kind of stuff. And so to hear those guys talk about that stuff, right, along with the things that was in Vietnam, that lethality, okay? Now, can you imagine consolidating at the company level when somebody, they'll literally annihilate you. They'll blow the grid square up, dropping it on your head. So if they could do that in Vietnam, imagine now as you present a larger target and they see it, you can't do it.
Yeah.
It's fascinating lethality, observation, you know, like hypersonic weapons. You know, it goes, it's undefeatable. Okay, what if I move? How do they acquire the target? So I get it. If they want to blast the face off of Mount Rushmore or hit the White House or the Pentagon, maybe we can't stop that. But a ship? How do they do target acquisition? And once we poke their eyes out, then what good is a hypersonic, you know, weapon on a dynamic target? Cricket. So there's more to this. You know, it's a constant spiral of weapons and technology, blah, 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 but fascinating. Email question. Hey, Mac, I'm curious. When did General Regner get off active duty, and is he familiar with the combat loads that we wore in Iraq and Afghanistan? So, Mike, when did you get off active duty? And I'm sure you're familiar, but
I got off active duty in 16. And I'm very familiar with the combat loads that a lot of our Marines went out of the forward operating bases down in the Helmand province when I was the OPSO for Afghanistan. And I was very familiar when I was the OPSO for 1MEF when we did the Battle of Fallujah. And General Mattis was the initial division commander, and then followed that with General Natonsky. And I remember having multiple conversations with the different OPSOs, General Larry Nicholson, and one star at that time.
Clark Lethane?
What's that?
Clark Lethane before him?
Yeah, that's right.
The big toe, as he was known?
So anyway, it was like we would always wonder and make sure, because we were all infantry guys, we always said, what are these guys carrying out of the FOB? What are they going down range in? And someone would say 65 pounds, someone would say 90 pounds. And so I asked my son when he was a lieutenant, a platoon commander, when he was over at Baja Rita out of Fallujah. And I said, what are you wearing when you go out of the FOB? He said, Dad, we try to keep it around 65 to 75. Sometimes you're at 90. Roll ahead, clock ahead. He's down in Helmand. And he's saying, Dad, if we're out for a day or two, we're sporting 90 pounds. I went, okay, what about any one of the, well, we put as much as we can on the Humvees. But the answer that I have found from infantrymen when I was a colonel and when I was a two-star general when I left, they would try to keep it around 65, but most of the time they're going out around 90. So I'm not sure. You know, it goes back to what you said earlier, Mac. Every different type of mission has a different mission statement to which the individuals are going to have to be, unfortunately, either having in their Humvees or having it at a resupply point or carrying on their back. So you know, you take the average weight of a Marine, let's say he weighs about 100, he or she, in the combat arms, let's say they're weighing just under 200 pounds, maybe 185, and now you're putting 100 pounds of gear on them. 50% of their body weight is on their back. And that is not going to really give you the ability to maneuver quickly on the battlefield. So if you're just going on a force march with 100 pounds on your back, okay, from point A to point B. But if you've got to shoot, move, and communicate with 50% of your body weight on your back, that's going to be difficult, and I think we all know that. I hope industry is aware of that, because one of the greatest books I ever read in some of these military schools they send you to or courses, the Soldiers Load the Mobility of a Nation. If the young men and young women that are going outside of the wire.
Sam Marshall.
You know, you're absolutely right. So that was a great question. Thank you.
You know, to me, the greatest need in the DOD is the need to somehow or other invent a new chemical compound that is lightweight but stops bullets of the 7.62 variety. Because those plates are absolute killers. And then on top of those plates, when you go out combat loaded with ammunition, if you've never done that, and you have, you know, four, six magazine pouch, three magazines apiece, every one of them loaded with lead that you're going to shoot, let me tell you, that's a load and a half.
Yeah.
Right. And then if you're carrying, you know, something else, like maybe a law, you know, slung over your back or whatnot, I mean, it is not for the faint of heart. And now people say, well, you can tailor your equipment for the mission. Okay. But let me just tell you, if you're a company commander and you say, all right, we're going without helmets and flak jackets. Okay. And General Zinni would argue for this all day, that you got to have that ability. And somebody gets killed, you know what's going to happen to you? My son got killed, and he wasn't wearing his helmet or his flak jacket? Whose decision was that? And are we, as an institution, going to say, no, it was part of his, you know, mission assessment? And what they were banking on that night was mobility and speed, and that's why he left that stuff back. And are we going to stand behind that guy, or is he going to get relieved? And I don't think most commanders are confident that, that they wouldn't be relieved and that somebody would back them up. And so what do you have? Like, well, we can't leave that behind. I'm not going to go down like that. So I think there's a lot of even moral ethical questions and leadership issues that the Marine Corps has to sort through, because that load, right? And I'm surprised. And Mike, you can remember both in Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm surprised we didn't have more heat casualties than we had. We rarely had heat casualties because the Marines learned to hydrate themselves and they learned how to do it. But, I mean, it was amazing when the temperatures hovering between 120 and 130, right? Think about that. And then you got all your stuff on with a long sleeve blouse, long sleeve pants, boots, a helmet that keeps all the heat in, and now we're going to throw another 100 plus pounds on your back with your plate carriers, your ammunition, and your water and all the rest of that stuff. That's rough.
That's rough.
You better be tough. You better be PTing and swimming, for God's sakes, because if not, you're going to die.
That e-sappy, the enhanced sappy that pushed the weight over 30 pounds per individual, whether it's the plate carrier or the full vest.
Right.
I got to tell you, that's something, Mac, if you get a chance, I want you to, when you go through that expo, look at the latest in technology, because everybody, at least once every year, someone says, General Reckner, would you take a look at my product? I've lightened the weight on the ESAPI. It's 7.62 proof, or it's 5.56 proof, you name it. And I always say, are you lightening the load? What are you giving up? What are you doing? How many can you make? So great point on that, just on the SAPI alone. So if you get a chance, look at some of the different types of plate carriers, as well as the SAPI plates or ESAPI plates, and what their protection level is, because that, unfortunately, you know, that's probably going to be 25% of the weight when an individual goes outside of the FOB. And you're absolutely correct. I go back to when you had to meet with the village elder or the sheikh or the tribal leader, and you wanted to make them feel as though, I'm in your home, I know it's safe here, and you take off your helmet and you take off your flak. And I remember to this day a great Lieutenant Colonel, Max Gallier, who did the exact same thing in a village elder meeting, and somebody got in that room, detonated a vest, and all the Americans in that room were either wounded seriously or killed. Max lost his life at that time. He made the decision, that great American hero, because he was trying to make that village safer. And he wanted to make the elder believe that we believe in you, but somebody got in through the wire, detonated a vest. So huge decisions that our American heroes have got to make when they want to either send a message and or protect their forces. And there's a delicate balance which you have identified.
It's tough. And will we stand behind them when it doesn't go right? Because I remember General Zinni, well, he did a PME at the basic school. And in 1990, summer 1990, and I remember Major John Kelly saw me and he said, "Hey, Mac, are you going to go see Colonel Zinni tonight?" I'm like, "Sir, you know how people float to the basic school and give talks. Should I? Because I'm going to be patrolling today. I've got to do this early tomorrow morning. Is it worth my time?" He said, "Don't miss it." So I went. For me, a life-changing experience. I refer to Zinni as the burning bush, and being a Catholic. Because I saw this guy, he was funny as hell. He was smart as hell. He was irreverent. General Van Riper, you can watch the thing. If you go to the All Marine Radio YouTube site, sir, you'll laugh your ass off. It's a 2.5 hour PME. That's the video's there. And Zinni, first of all, he's busting Bill Lind's balls all night, which everybody in the audience loved, because we hated Bill Lind. He was telling us what was wrong with us, and he was a slope shoulder guy with a gut, snarky ass comments all the time, and most Marines hated him. Zinni's just feeding it to him all night. And so Zinni's talking about PME, and he says, "In 9th Marines, we're not encumbered by dependents, so I can have this robust PME thing," which I love. So I have, one night, I have General Van Riper, Colonel Ripley, and Bill Fike. And he says they called one the philosopher, one the Prussian, and one the surfer. And he said, "All of them have a shit pot full of awards, great combat experience, great guys, and so we're going to do this." And so he says, and then he goes through, one's a surfer, one's a philosopher, one's a Prussian. And then he looks over at Van Riper, who's sitting off to the left, and he says, "Don't wax your board, General." And with that, right, because Van Riper was the personification of the most uptight white guy you've ever met. Now, I don't know him personally, but that's what people saw him, right? He was this, you know, he believed in uniformity, and he was a disciplinarian, and he's got this tall, slender guy with a chrome dome, and you're just like, whoa. And Van, and Zinni knew him as a friend, and he just turns and just feeds it to him. It was hilarious. It was absolutely hilarious. But Zinni said, "Hey, look, I don't believe in helmets and flak jackets." He said, "You know, I hear these guys in Vietnam say, I always wore mine. It was zipped up. My chin strap was always buttoned." He said, "Bullshit. I've never seen a picture of anybody in Vietnam with a flak jacket zipped up and a chin strap buttoned, ever. If you can find one, show it to me, because I want to see it." And everybody's laughing. He said, "And I'll tell you what, I think those things kill as many people as they save. For every one guy they save, there was 10 guys that were out of gas, not paying attention, and had something bad happen to them." He said, and so this is why I love General Zinni. He said, "So I tell you what, we got to think that stuff. It's great to protect yourself, but you still got to be lethal, and being lethal is about mobility on some occasions, right? And we got to think that stuff through really hard." And that's when I said, "Who is this guy, man? Like, where did this guy come from?" And so those same words apply today more than ever, and your son as a battalion commander has got to feel just as comfortable when he does his mission analysis saying, "Hey, leave all the extra stuff here, you're going slick, right, and here's what I want," and being successful doing that.
I want to give a shout out for a person who back in 2003, he knew I was going into Iraq as a MEF G3. His name, back then he was like Major A.J. Pasajian. Now A.J. Pasajian is a one-star in charge of Marine Corps Systems Command. And he said, "Sir, you're going to be like the OPSO over in Iraq. OPSOs go all over the battlefield, and you know, the grunts out there, they're overloaded with all this type of modern protective equipment. We're developing a new system. It's called the plate carrier. So it's a third of the weight. You got a plate in your chest and one in your back, and you could probably take the one out of your back because Marines are always facing the enemy. And so, sir, you're going to reduce the weight. I want you to try this and be one of my experimenters on this plate carrier, which reduces the weight of the flak jacket by like about 50-60%. I wore it. Within 2 weeks, I wrote back to a major then, A.J. Pasajian, and say, "A.J., everybody wants these things. Whoever's making them, go into the max repro mode." So now, well, the clock ahead, A.J.'s the brigadier in charge of Marine Corps Systems Command. And I actually had somebody, just a good person, ask me a week ago, "General, how do you get in touch with somebody at Marine Corps Systems Command if you think you have protective equipment that they should know about?" And I dropped an email to this one-star general, and I said, "AJ, whoever the person is in your command that listens to people that have great ideas." So my point on this is that, Mac, if there are people in your audience, your listening audience, that have a great idea or just wants to use their thoughts, their ideas, and have it bounced against a Marine Corps command that doesn't put their hand up and say, "Talk to the hand," that actually says, "I will listen," you've got to have them either get in touch with you, get in touch with me, or get in touch with Marine Corps Systems Command. And I got to tell you, the commanding general there will take, he may not take the call himself, but he will respond or have his team respond to the requirement and or the potential valuable resource that we could give to our Marines. So shout out for Systems Command, because I believe in their leadership.
My guest today is retired Marine Corps Major General Mike Regner, and he is out here on the West Coast for the Marine West Expo, and he is one of the head honchos of that, as he honchos that program. And Mike, here's an email for you. "Hey, Mac, I heard you talking to Alex a little bit ago, and so I'm desperately looking for a retiree to get on the base so I can come. I did not retire as a Marine Corps retiree, so I have no ID. My question to General Regner is something that Alex said and something that you're going to be a part of. Alex talked about trying to blow life into the robust intellectual part of these expos. I'm curious to hear what General Regner has to say about that. Yeah, I'm a part of that, so you better say nice things, Mike.
Okay, so back to what I just talked a little bit about, Marine Corps Systems Command. Well, 2.5 years ago when I retired, and I'd looked at the modern-day Marine Expos and the Expo on the East Coast, the West Coast, Camp Lejeune, Camp Pendleton, and I thought, a lot of good equipment out there, but I also want the academic, the educational side. I want the brain power of Marines and or Marine staffs and commands to be heard by audience. In other words, if industry is making a new plate carrier, a new amphibious combat vehicle, how are they actually listening to Marines? It might be a retired Marine that joins their team or a Marine corporal who got out. I wanted to take the educational level of a expo and ratchet it up a notch or two or three. Because I want Marines, whether they're active duty or retired, to come to the expo, see the equipment, see the program, see the different corporations that have resources. But I also want an educational side. You know, what General Gray used to say when he was a commandant, he says, Marine officers, reading too little, running too much. And I still see General Gray all the time. He says, what book have you read? What book have you read? I love him. But my point on that is the educational value. If you get a panel and you get master gunnery sergeants and sergeants major, and they're talking leadership, and in the audience, you've got NCOs, staff NCOs, non-NCOs, young officers, old officers, and they're hearing from the burning bush, which are some of those staff NCOs who have come up the hard way, learned how to work all the different areas of leadership. That's where I want Alex to take the expos, whether it was a leadership dialogue, and he's doing more of that with a couple of sergeant majors we talked about.
Right.
But I also want industry as well as a panel led by some of the brilliant folks that are in the Marine Corps, all ranks. And I said, okay, that's where you want this to go. Case in point, Marine Corps Warfighting Lab is commanded by Brigadier General Kristen Wortman. The right. Marine Corps Warfighting Lab put out a new program called the Marine Corps Robotics Autonomous Systems, MCRAS, R-A-S. Brilliant. And a colonel put this whole program together on robotics and autonomous systems. And you can figure that one out. You launch it, it's gone, it attacks, it takes pictures, it does surveillance. I said to the Brigadier General, Kristen Wortman, yesterday, I said, this is brilliant stuff. I'm liking the fact it was in a February Gazette, but it needs to be discussed and disseminated at a different expo, whether it's Lejeune, Pendleton, or Camp at Quantico. And he wrote back within an hour. He said, General Regner, the colonel in charge of this will get on your schedule at Camp at Quantico, if not Camp Lejeune, to discuss what's already in the Gazette, because not everybody gets a chance to read a periodical. But if you're in a educational forum, which I think the expos are, it's not just see the equipment, touch the equipment, make recommendations. It's also a chance to be educated to, in some cases, you'll get educated, but you'll also educate with your feedback to the panel members with some of the questions that you'll fire away at them. So my point on that is expos can be more than equipment. I think they must be educational, just as I've seen at Sierra Space, at some of the other branch armed forces, special operations, low intensity conferences, the special ops forces conferences, conventions. I think expos are more than equipment. They're also a sharing of great ideas from our panelists as well as the audience who asks tough questions. So thanks for that plug.
Got it. All right. So give us your schedule. Where are you? Are you going to be there? First of all, you and I are going to have a chance to meet later on today. So I'm excited about that. I'll even let you buy me a drink because you're a retired Major General. So you're tunned up.
And my wife gave me my Liberty card.
Nice.
She also said you can take $10 out of that kitty that I give you every month. I'm going, wow, honey. You know, when you deploy, you get allotment. you maybe get $50 a payday. You get, oh, golly, where can I spend it on smokes and cokes?
Oh, well, come on, sir. Now that you're making all that big retiree money, so don't even try to convince us. All right.
You're right. You get a micro brew. When I see you, you're gonna get the beverage of choice. And so that's pretty good. Yeah, I'm going to be later today. I'll see you at the association event. And Marine Corps Association Foundation, led by Lieutenant General Mark Faulkner. And, of course, Lieutenant General Jody Osterman is going to be the speaker there tonight. Right. So I'll see you there at that event, but I'll also be on scene all day Thursday and Friday at Area 15 across from the air station to, in fact, you know, be on scene. I do have a meeting with the 1st Marine Division commander, Cass Castelvi.
Right.
You know, I commanded the 1st Marine Division. I have to go by there and kiss the ring of the current commander and say hi to the staff because I know he's a great hero. He's got a great team. So I will make a couple of office calls on some of the leadership on the base during the next 2 or 3 days. But I can't wait to say, see you, Mac, and give you a man hug and give you check out your biceps, your triceps, and just say, hey, what happened to you, brother?
You wouldn't be saying that to me. I'm good to go. All right, Mike, is there anything that you want people to know about the expo that's going to happen over the course of the next couple of days that I've been smart enough to ask you?
No, you've hit it out of the ballpark. I think that folks should come there, get a look at some of the modern technology equipment, and two more things. Be ready at any moment to tell an industry person or an individual in business or an organization, give them your feedback. Fire away at them. They're only as good as the information that you give them. So challenge them, task them, make it better, make it lighter, make it more lethal. Point one. Point two, some of the Marines that are on your radio station now, Mac, they're going to be out. They're going to be on the first sedative, just like I am. They're going to look for an opportunity to excel. There is 100-plus vendors, up to 150 vendors there. If they like a particular vendor because they love that type of product, hit them up and say, I'd like to know more about you. How many veterans do you employ in your organization? Because I want to be part of it. So lean forward, look for that opportunity, create that opportunity, because the future is yours, Marines. Hoorah.
Whoa. That's always a trick question, just so you know. Was there anything I didn't ask you? And you did well by saying, no, of course not, Mac. You hit it out of the park. That's because if you said, well, as a matter of fact, then I note that, just so you know. So well done on the trick question, Mike. Very, very good. All right. First of all, thank you for coming on today. I'm really excited to come do the show down there for the next couple of days. I'm also excited to be a presenter of Post-Traumatic Winning. The response that I got last week at the General Officer Symposium from it was out of the park, just like when I gave it at Camp Lejeune close to a month ago. And so, to me, it is rooted in our culture, and I can't wait to tell it to a wider audience as I'm working with the Marine Corps to actually go around the world and do it for Marines. So pretty exciting. And anytime that we have a chance to export our culture into America writ large, we should not pass up that opportunity. And the chance to make the Marine Corps a national leader in how to fight living with trauma, which will impact the rate of suicide in this country, to me is extremely exciting. And I love that it comes from the Marine Corps and that the rest of this nation can learn from our culture, this incredible tribe we're a part of. And you and Alex have given me a forum to do that, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Here for you, Mike, anytime.
All right. Have a great day, sir. I'll see you tonight.
You're off. Thanks.
There you have it. Mike Regner, motivator. That's right. Regner, man. I like that stuff. All right, we're going to take a break. We come back. We have not checked the news of the day yet, so we will do that. More of All Marine Radio coming up on this motivated radio program next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.